Welcome to After Hours with me, Rick Kogan. That is the title track off a brand new, fantastic CD, George the Bomb, and it is my honor to have in here that very George, George Freeman, who on April 10th celebrated his 92nd birthday, but also at the same time, George, very few 92-year-olds, or a guy who used to do it, is Studs Terkel, when he was in his 90s, went, well, Rick, I'm 93 and I'm celebrating a new book. You are celebrating the CD, too. Howard Reich wrote a couple fantastic pieces about you in the Tribune. I've been talking to you out here. What's the secret, George? What's the secret to remaining vibrant and alive and creative? Because this CD, done by the other guests in the studio, Joni Pilato and Bradley Parker Sparrow, husband and wife, a musical team, and dear friends of mine. What's the secret, George?
People like Joni Sparrow and you.
Yeah.
Keep you going because you're so beautiful, you know, so alive. Because when you're coming up, you meet people that just don't like you.
True words were never spoken. And one of the things, though, about George and Joni and Sparrow get into this, coming up, you and your late brother, Von Freeman, who I just adored, not as much as you did, but I adored him. You guys when you were coming up, I mean, it is a list of jazz history. It is Charlie Parker, it's Stan Getz, it's Sonny Stitt, it's Johnny Griffin, it's Ben Webster, and 1,000 other names. Did they not treat you well when you were young?
Beautiful. Beautiful.
They did.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a funny thing. All the professionals always did treat you wonderfully. It's those that are not professional, they treat you bad.
Right, because, well, in many ways, because they're jealous, I think, part of it.
Well, I don't know what it is, but I know there's a difference. It's a difference in the good and the bad.
Yeah.
And seeing like all the professionals, they have such a hard life themselves.
Sure.
And they know what it is to come out here and see somebody trying to make it. Well, scuffle like they did, you know.
Well, and it's a hard life to devote yourself, as you and your brother did, to music. And Joni, and you and Sparrow know this, too. I mean, that is a sacrifice. It's not like getting a job as an accountant or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's quite different.
But on the other hand, you get all the pleasure and all the joy of creating this beautiful music and art. So,
well, and all the rewards, too. There've got to be. You were at the Green Mill a couple nights ago for the annual birthday party that Dave Gemmelo said is going to go on forever. He goes, well, I can't wait till he's back when he's 100.
But Gemmelo did say that.
He did. Mm-hmm. What is it like for the three of you? And I want you two to talk about this, too.
I think it's fantastic, really.
But seeing, you must get some kind of amazing kind of energy from your interaction playing the guitar and the audience. They must, just in the way they react to you, not just screaming and applauding, but a vibe that is shared.
Well, you know, Rick, I'd tell you the truth about me is that the audience is one thing, and personally, the way you feel is another thing, though. But, you know, I was raised with a religious family.
Mm-hmm.
My mother and the background and see, when I was coming up, I was the teacher's pet.
I can understand that. I can see why that is.
I'm not through yet.
No, you're never. You won't be through.
I was the teacher's pet. Yeah. When I was going to church, I didn't want to make me the altar boy.
Mm-hmm.
This is
news to me.
Yeah, you know, when I was, and my mother kept me in the house because I was just nice and quiet. Until I got to be
before you were George the Bomb?
Oh, this is long before George the Bomb.
this was the first CD was George the Altar Boy.
Yeah.
The first CD was George the Altar Boy.
George, you want to make me the altar boy, yeah.
When did you take me back? When did you first touch a guitar?
Well, my brother played a ukulele. Oldest brother was.
Yeah.
He wanted to charm the ladies. So he would go around playing ukulele, singing to the ladies in the neighborhood.
Did it work?
It worked for him. It sure did. And then what happened to me was I at a nightclub there called the Rum Boogie Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a guitar player in there playing. His name was T-Bone Walker.
Oh, wow, sure.
And I used to go around there in the back door and look inside the door there. My daddy would kill me if he knew what I was doing.
Yeah.
And I watched him play the guitar. He played the guitar with the guitar behind his neck.
Yeah, yeah.
Singing, "You Call This Stormy Monday." And so I went home, and the women were throwing money at him and all that stuff. You know, I was impressed. But my oldest brother, Buzz, see, my father used to come, he was a policeman. And my mother was super religious, bless her heart. If you talked to my mother and you mentioned God, you was in. I really, you're talking about God,
yeah,
to my mother.
Sure.
Oh, I love you. You're just so nice. Come on in. And my father used to bring home different musicians from different parts. He worked, he had a beat on 35th Street at the Grand Terrace. Mm. And he'd bring different people over to the house, like
Earl
Hines.
Didn't your father bring Louis Armstrong to the house?
Yeah, Louis Armstrong to the house. It's just a wonderful thing. And then we had a radio. And at that time, they had jazz bands coming on the radio.
Sure. Sure.
And I used to listen to the radio day in, day out. So finally what happened was I went to this, I heard this guitar player playing, and my oldest brother, Bruz, would bring home all the latest current records. And he brought on this Benny Goodman record with Charlie Christian.
Wow. Sure.
Now,
sure.
I've always been enthusiastic about the saxophone, because my brother plays saxophone.
Yes, he did.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So, therefore, when I was, Vaughn would play the horn and go in the closet and practice and close the door. And so, I was the altar boy, you know.
Yeah, I know. You were the teacher's pet.
Don't forget
that.
I was the altar boy. So, my father, when he get mad at me and my mother, they put me in the closet.
With a guitar or all by yourself?
By myself in the closet.
Wow.
Put me in there with all those sacks of clothes in the closet.
Sure, sure.
So I go in there and go
to, go to sleep.
I'll be glad to get in there. I'll go in there and go to sleep. On top, so Vaughn one day, he said, listen. He said, you got to stop just carrying on what you're doing. I don't know what I was doing. I was the altar boy. I didn't know what I was doing. So he says, you got to stop going to the closet. I go in there and practice all the time.
You know? He wanted the space for himself to practice.
Yeah, he didn't have any other closet to practice in.
Only one closet.
He said, now stop sleeping there and get out.
Yeah, it did. That's what he did. So you got to stop this. You got to get your act together. He talked to me like he's my father.
Sure.
You got to get your act together and cut that out. And I got to go in there and practice my horn.
Wow.
So every time they go to come in the closet and get me, I'll be in there asleep.
So did you ever think about practicing in the closet?
Did you practice your guitar?
I wasn't playing the guitar at the time.
Oh, okay.
All right, we got to take a break, but we'll be back with George Freeman, Joni Pilato, and Bradley Parker Sparrow. We're talking about, there's a party coming up Friday, another event, another of the endless birthday parties for George Freeman, who has turned 92 on April 10th, and his lovely mother, who he was just talking about, lived to be 103. So listen to this man, ladies and gentlemen. He has the secret to longevity and creativity. Another tune from the brand new CD release. I love talking about CD releases because so many people just stream junk, and they don't even understand what CDs are anymore. But that is from George the Bomb, brought to you by Southport Records, run by Bradley Parker Sparrow and his beautiful singing wife. Sparrow and I have collaborated on a couple of musical spoken word feats, which was great fun for me, Sparrow. We really should do that again sometime. Really should. But you were just, there's another CD release party this Friday. all the information, and especially the information about how to buy George Freeman's latest CD, George the Bomb. They don't have available the George the Altar Boy or George the Teacher's Pet or the George Who Lives in the Closet CDs, but those are coming. How did this CD come to be? Joni, you just said that George kind of composed that while you guys were recording.
Well, some of the songs we had discussed a lot in our many phone conversations, talking about what we should record to include on the record with Billy Branch, with just the band, a couple of things George wanted me to sing.
With you.
He wanted Sparrow to play on Tonto. But Uncle Funky, I said, George, we need another song. We don't have enough songs for the record. I said, didn't you say something about your nephew Mark calls you Uncle Funky?
Mm-hmm.
I said, can't you write an Uncle Funky song? And right then and there, he just wrote it.
Were you two, you know, not being a musician, I'm amazed at almost everything musicians do, but were you, Sparrow, particularly amazed at that ability?
Yeah, that's very rare.
Myself
as a pianist and a composer, sometimes you'll labor over an idea for weeks, or you throw it in the garbage. And George said, "Yeah, I got this riff here," and show it to the bass player and the drummer, and all of a sudden, improvisation, the mutual respect of all the musicians sharing.
Yeah,
you get a song that
that works. It's like creating something out of. You know, it's like Michelangelo sculpting something or a painter painting something.
So
what is
song,
it like?
If I can say, the song is so new. And George, I hope you don't mind if I tell the little story last night, right before the third set.
Yeah.
George comes up to me and he's like, Joni. I said, what? He said, how does Uncle Funky go?
It was an inspiration. It came like that. George, I know you have a deep affection for Chicago, but man, you and your late brother Vaughn saw the music scene change like crazy over the decades.
It certainly
and
is.
I know you've been all over the world. What is it that keeps you and your music so, you know, tied to Chicago?
But you wouldn't believe this, though, but I have to say it. God speaks to me. He tells me exactly what to do.
Yeah.
I heard people say before, I got to feel it. I got to do this. I got to do that. And I got to do this and do that and do this and do that. Well, with me, it seemed like we worked last night, and with different personalities all together. The drummer. He don't know what you're going to do. Organ player is on the other end.
Yeah.
And a guitar player, thank God he's sitting next to me. He used to stand up and play. Jonas told me to tell him to sit down.
Well, you're connecting better that way, because you sit down now.
I stand up playing the guitar when I was coming up. Guitar dead up in the air.
Sure. Like a minute man with a guitar.
right.
But that's no more. So when you're playing the music now, it's just the ideas when I be playing. He tells me what to play, how to play. Because up there, you don't know what you're going to do. People out there.
But that's what, you know, I remember my father would play me as a very young man, these old, you know, 48s or whatever they were called, 78s of Louis Armstrong, who he adored and who he saw here. And so I was imbued with jazz from my earliest age. And that's one of the great things about watching jazz. You could say, okay, we're going to do like cut three off our new CD, and it's never going to be the same on any stage because there's a language that goes on, isn't
Absolutely.
There? Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. No doubt about that, you know. So
that's the beauty of improvisation. So even if it's a composition like Uncle Funky,
right,
it's going to be different.
But there's a freedom to go. I think it's a matter. That's what jazz is. It's a freedom to go other places and take other routes and maybe come back to the song or maybe not come back to the song.
Well, that's the point there, Rick. Now, you've got to be free to do what you want to do.
Yes.
Now, Joni made a point, made a statement in the car. Now, the drummer and I don't see each other until next year at this time. So when he comes on stage, you don't know what you're going to do.
Yeah, but there's also such excitement in that, isn't there, George?
Certainly it is.
There's danger. There's a little risk involved, I think.
There's always a risk involved in playing. We don't know who you're playing with.
Yeah, right. How many CDs do you have?
Joni? Well, recordings?
Yeah.
Well, four with Southport. We did Rebellion was your first CD we did together, and that's one where Vaughn Freeman said, oh, it's George's turn. You guys have to record George. I want you to record George. And I said, Vaughn, I've told this story before. Vaughn, who's going to play piano on the record? And Vaughn said, I am. Mm-hmm. So it's one of, I think, the very few instances where Vaughn is playing piano on a recording, you know, and he was wonderful.
Yeah,
the pianist. Oh my God! Well, a great musician. So,
fantastic. And all of this, you should really go to chicagosound.com to get more information about how to buy.
Oh, and
these CDs
and
go to the party this coming Friday at.
Friday
the 26th.
Oh, Friday the 26th. Yeah. Oh, we got time to rest up.
Almost
for this party.
Rest up,
Ricky. It's going to be out of sight.
You're excited about
this. What I'm going to do is just sign autographs, just sign pictures.
He's going to meet and greet at the bar and
oh my God, that
sign autographs.
So exciting.
We've got John Devlin doing live music. We're going to be playing George the Bomb CD all night. There's going to be George the Bomb drink specials, cornbread, and you name it. And it's at Lang's Lounge.
3500 North Southport.
3500 Southport from 6 to 9, Friday the 26th of
and you'll
April.
Have, you think you'll have enough CDs there? For people to buy?
They have to buy the CD if they're going to get some cornbread.
Okay. That sounds like
and the cornbread, the cornbread point is that Billy and George improvised a song on the CD called Where's the Cornbread? And it's a hit.
Well, we'll play that after the news. I'm going to keep you guys for a little while longer. But do, indeed, for all the information about this party at Lang's Lounge, which is a week from this coming Friday, and information about George Freeman's CDs and all the, I'm the official biographer of Southport Records. What number are we up to now? How many?
Oh, yeah.
How many?
This is 148.
That makes them a Chicago treasure, don't you think, George? Because they're very, you know, a record label continually putting out music from Chicago treasure.
I can't believe it myself, really.
Yeah, I know. It's just.
I can't believe it myself, really.
It is an amazing thing.
Fantastic.
Yep. We're going to get some news, and then we'll be back, and we'll listen to this cornbread song. Right, hand long? No, we will. I want to hear the cornbread song. What I really want to hear is the George altar boy song, or the George in a closet song, but we'll get to those.
Yeah, I was the altar boy, you know.
I know, man. I want
to hear. Also, I was the teacher's pet.
The teacher's pet. There's a three CD set. George the teacher's pet, George the altar boy, and George in the closet. Very difficult to find, but look at the Southport label coming up in the future.
I smell some cornbread.
Have to, ladies and gentlemen, buy the CD too. I would like to play as much as I can, but I'd much rather like talking to George Freeman, Bradley Parker, Sparrow, and Joni Pilato. Joni and Sparrow, the two who run the amazing treasure that is Southport Records, and have put out their most recent release, their
148.
I keep tabs every couple of years. I write a long story about Southport being the greatest jazz music treasure in Chicago, 148. there's going to be a what sounds like a fabulous party a week from Friday, on Friday the 26th from 6. And if George Freeman says it's going to be a good party, oh, yeah, it's going to be a good party.
I'm looking forward to it.
It is a meet and greet. There, you're going to hear that CD. You're going to hear live music from John Devlin, and you're going to get cornbread. But yeah, mostly you're going to get to you're going to get to talk to George Freeman, because one of the he has a living history of jazz. I don't know how else to say it. He is a living history of jazz. I mean, you played with, and I think you once bought a drink for Charlie Parker, and it doesn't get more.
Oh, my goodness.
What was he like? Was he was
it's a great experience for me, because I remember coming up, my father brought the first Charlie Parker record into the house.
Wow.
When Vaughn and I never forget that. He'd come home with this record, and it was Charlie Parker playing saxophone on there. And I never thought I would end up playing with Charlie Parker. It was I couldn't even imagine it.
Well, it would be like a little league kid seeing Babe Ruth play.
Same thing.
Yeah, and say, well, I like baseball, but I'm never going to be with this guy. Right. It must have been amazing.
And on top of that, he fell in love with me.
Because you mentioned God to him, or wait a minute.
Well, I mean, he liked my plan, of course.
Well, that's one. You're halfway there.
He just fell in love with my plan, my ability to play his kind of music.
Mm-hmm.
And he was strictly a bebopper.
Yo, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I remember going to the bathroom in the back of the Persian ballroom. And I was late coming on the bandstand. It was time for the band to hit. And they were all gathered around Charlie Parker. And Burry said, "We don't start till George get here."
Oh, come on. Wow. Wow.
I heard him say it.
Wow. What a story. You liked him. You didn't just admire him, but you liked him.
Oh, God, yeah. He was God as far as the music was concerned.
Yeah.
Because when bebop came out there, I was just at the right time hearing it.
It sounds a lot too like, George, that your dad, the Chicago police officer, encouraged you and your brother.
Oh,
I mean, it was not like go be a dentist or something. It was like, listen to this music.
My father told me, he said, stick with track. I used to run track.
Yeah.
He told me, stick with the track. I told him I wanted to be a musician.
Well, you said, Dad, but there's no money in running track. That's not like a job.
No, what he meant by that, he wanted me to be clean.
Yeah.
And keep my physical being up. He didn't want me out there being a musician. So, therefore.
Because musicians are in smoky nightclubs.
Oh, God.
People who run track are out in the daylight, right, in the sunshine. But did he? He must have. Your folks must have been incredibly proud of you and Vaughn.
Well, like I said, it was three of us. Vaughn, Brush played drums. He was an excellent drummer.
Huh.
He was and Vaughn, saxophone player, and myself. And at one time, we all played together.
Oh, that must have been unbelievable.
It was the highlight of my life.
Oh,
you know?
I'll bet.
It was just simply fantastic, the three brothers playing together.
Oh.
And but I knew then that Vaughn told me way back, he said, take care of yourself. He said, because success has come to you late in life.
Mm.
I don't know what he meant by that, but I'm 92 now.
Well, you got some time. You can wait. Well, you can wait. I mean, Dave Gemmelos. Hey, you know.
Rick, I don't know.
Yeah, you turn 92 on April 10th, and you seem, and I'm not being idiotic about this, you're as lively as anybody who's ever been, Dan will tell you this too, as anybody who's ever been in this studio, and livelier than most. Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
Is he telling the truth?
Who?
I think
absolutely,
George is turning back the clock, Rick. Right. He's getting younger.
Well, age is there's a chronological age, but there's also a creative age, I think. And I think part of it, George, you're playing with people like Billy and being with Joni and Sparrow.
That's what it is.
It is.
That's really the bottom line, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Keep going. Keep fresh ideas. Keep going. Because I imagine what would it be for Charlie Parker to be here now. What would he be doing?
Oh, boy.
Wow.
He'd be in his 90s, certainly in his...
Dizzy Gillespie.
Yeah.
Louis Armstrong, think about what he'd be doing. Yeah.
Well, Louis Armstrong would be wildly rich now. Maybe the great thing, Louis Armstrong could be president of the United States now if he lived.
If I didn't pull it, I mean, he put Ronald Reagan in there. He should have.
Well, he had a taste of politics, Oh, George, you're excited about this, not only this CD, but this party. I know you were ever excited to play and be on stage and collaborate with other musicians, but this meet and greet thing just sounds fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, when you go a week from Friday to 3500 North Southport to Lang's Lounge, because we won't be able to get to it today, I need you to ask George to what he was like as a Boy Scout. We've heard about him as an altar boy. We heard about him being locked in closets. This has been a wonderfully wide-ranging conversation. We've heard about him playing with Charlie Parker, and Charlie Parker holding the show up so George could come up on stage.
He sure did.
I know. So, what else could we hear? Well, there's a boy, George,
he
like
sure
as
did.
I, we're not of the same,
it
quite
came out
the same.
Of his mouth.
Huh? I know it did. Oh, I'm
going to start to George get here.
See, this is a guy, George. You are a human being that everything that comes out of your mouth, I believe. And
that's
that I certainly not say that about 99% of the people I know. I mean, there is no artifice to you. There's no artifice to the way you play.
Can't believe it.
There's no artifice to the way you perform. And that's why it is, Joni and Sperry. It has got to be you can obviously see how joyful I am, but it's got to be an ongoing joy for you to know this man.
Listen, Ricky, on top of that. At the Jazz Showcase, Joe Siegel's Jazz Showcase, it's a big picture up there of Charlie Parker.
Oh, yeah, I know, sure.
He got my town.
Yeah.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, next time you go to Jazz Showcase, look at Bird's tie, and that is George Freeman's tie.
Did he keep the tie, Charlie Parker?
Well, Vaughn gave it to him, you said.
Vaughn had the tie on.
Yeah.
But it was your tie.
And Bird walks in with no tie on and a white shirt. And Vaughn said, "Bird, you can't go out there looking like that." And Bird said, "Why?" He said, "You don't have no tie on. He said, what you want me to do?" Vaughn took off my tie that I gave to him to wear.
And gave it to Charlie Parker.
And put it around Bird's neck, and Bird put the tie on.
Wow.
And went back, left Chicago, went to New York City, and made that picture you saw with my tie.
So, ladies and gentlemen, the meet and greet with George Freeman a week from Friday at Lang's Lounge at 3500 North Southport, you have gotten simply a small taste of the depth and humanity and fun of this human being. You know what I think your next CD should be, George?
What?
I think it should just be storytelling. I think it should be cut one. Yeah. Boy Scout. Cut two, closet.
No,
cut three, Bird's tie.
It might have been too hard for storytelling. I couldn't stand it.
Really? I think you're pretty good at it. I got to tell you, George.
Only with you, Rick.
I cannot thank you three people for coming in here. That's and I right. cannot thank the three of you for continuing to do what you do to make music and to promote music.
Well, thank you too, Rick.
And to give music to Chicago. Thank you.